to TJ Frog's podcast, where I chat about my knitting, Dorset buttons and creativity in general, as well as sharing my love of Scotland, especially the Highlands and Islands. Hello, I'm Tanya, aka TJ Frog, or sometimes called the Button Lady, and in my creative business, I predominantly make and promote the traditional craft of Dorset buttons, which dates back to the early 1600s, a cottage industry that employed many people in Dorset on the south coast of England. Brought up in Dorset, I now live on the Isle of Skye, and wherever you may be in the world, welcome and thank you for joining me for my 43rd episode, Challenges. Hello, welcome. It's the second episode of 2024. Yay! And the focus is about challenges. Who loves a challenge? I do, and I am often setting myself both big and small challenges. And of course, there are also those challenging times that sometimes come our way, whether they be positive or negative. And all of this encapsulates the areas that I'm going to talk about today around my health, my creativity, my business, and it even relates to the Skye focus. Firstly, health challenges. I finally feel as if I'm turning a corner with my energy, which has been sorely amiss for far too long. It's a great feeling, although the challenge for me now is remembering not to overdo things and not to overload my schedule. And as someone who always likes to be doing something, I find it very hard to keep myself in check with this. I volunteer from time to time with the local community cafe. I don't think I've done it since May last year. I was supposed to do it in November, I think, but I had COVID, and I did one a few weeks ago, and the following day I was just totally out of it. Physically, every single joint was screaming at me, stiff, sore, and I was just exhausted, totally done in, and couldn't do anything the whole day. So that was just a reminder that, you know, lifting tables, putting tables up, putting tables down, bending up and down in the cupboards to get crockery out, I kind of overdid it in a very short space of time. In a bid to alleviate some of these joint problems and inflammation issues, especially those that seem to have arisen in my postmenopausal body, I've taken up the challenge of a couple of dietary changes. And one is eating dark chocolate. Do you eat dark chocolate? I have done in the past, but it would never be my first choice. Recently, though, we were gifted an amazing tasting selection box of green and black chocolates, which had white milk and dark miniatures and a smaller bar of 70%. I'd not had green and black chocolates for years, and I'd forgotten how much I enjoy them. And we were quite surprised how much we liked the 70%. And that led us to purchasing some Lindt 70%, 85%, and would you believe it, 99% cocoa. I mean, I didn't even realise you could get 99% dark chocolate. We very slowly and gingerly worked our way through them in order of percentage, starting with the lowest, having just the odd square. And it was only when we opened the 99% bar, it made us laugh because it came with important tasting advice on the inside. And it basically said that to actually appreciate the flavour, they recommended that you progressively develop your palate through our range of high cocoa content chocolate, starting with 70%, 85%, and finally 99%. So we had literally done what they were advising you to do without actually knowing that that was the advice. Sound advice, though, because there's no way I would have been able to have taken 99%, because dark chocolate I always associate with being quite bitter. When we have some, we literally have one square and break it into little pieces and just let it melt gently and slowly on the tongue. It has been a challenge for me because I do think that intensity is quite an acquired taste, but my taste buds have definitely changed with doing this gradual progression with it. And interestingly, there's a Lindt mint dark chocolate, which has a minimum of 47% cocoa. And I never used to like that. I found it quite harsh. And I had some of that recently and I loved it. So my taste buds were definitely much more in tune with it and not finding it so bitter. Don't get me wrong, some good quality white or milk chocolate will win me over any day, but I'm now really very content with my square of dark chocolate. It's just I wanted to make this change to see if I could eat the dark chocolate, which has reportedly good health benefits. Secondly, during COVID, I started doing some juicing and I mainly was doing a green juice with celery, cucumber, spinach, mint, and either a kiwi fruit or apple. Well, fast forward to 2024 and in February, we had a wonderful holiday in Bangkok and the hotel that we were staying at had these amazing juices at breakfast and we started trying those out. Having never liked beetroot, I still have very vivid memories of the salad tray at school dinners and you'd have in line, you know, there'd be like a row of cucumber, a row of tomatoes, a row of lettuce, and there'd be this row of slices of beetroot. And of course, all the juice had run out, so the lettuce was this reddy purpley colour. And yeah, it was a visual thing that it made everything else change colour. It was a texture thing with beetroot. And even as an adult, I struggle with beetroot, although I don't mind it shredded up in a salad, but just a solid piece of beetroot I find quite hard to eat. So trying out a beetroot juice was a bit of a challenge, but I have to say beetroot, apple and ginger, love it. The juicer at home is now fully operational. The challenges here though are which juice do we make? There's so many different ones that you can do and they've all got different benefits supposedly, and you know, it's then buying the ingredients and making sure that nothing gets wasted. I'm having a good time playing around with them and I definitely feel better from having a juice here and there. Anyway, I digress. Let's have a look at what content I've got for you today and where some of the challenges might be. The weather? We've enjoyed some great calm periods recently. Creativity? Blocking, test knitting, and did I meet the challenge that I set myself last episode? Dorset Buttons and wider news from the TJ Frog Pad, challenges and new horizons. Sky Focus, the second part in a three-part series, Getting to Sky. The weather. The stormy start to 2024 that we had rolled on into February. Fortunately, we managed to miss most of it as we were away for half of February visiting family and with our trip that I just mentioned. Going away at that time of year, we really noticed the change in length of daylight on our return. Sunset and sunrises were each over half an hour's difference, so an extra hour of light a day. And of course, now the clocks have sprung forward for us, it really makes such a difference. Last time I mentioned I'd started using a seasonal affective disorder light. And recently I heard on the Scotland Outdoors podcast about a research project by Edinburgh and Glasgow University. They carried out a series of workshops during the 2022-2023 winter with people who experienced SAD. And each of the workshops was approached with a creative aspect. And they've produced an ebook called Light is a Right, A Guide to Wintering Well, to increase awareness of SAD and also our relationship with light that is so fundamental to our day-to-day living and working. They looked at how to live better with the light that is available to us in urban and rural spaces. And if you want to listen to it, it's the episode on the 8th of November 2023 and it's called How to Winter Well. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the ebook as well. While they focus on Scottish winters, it obviously very much relates across a much wider geographical area. We've had some pretty good spells of weather since the end of February, some lovely calm, sunny, spring-like days. We had a blip of weather early April with Storm Kathleen, although to be honest, in our little corner, the winds were not exceptional compared to some things that we do have. However, what was fascinating was seeing the effect of the storm on the surface of the sea, the patterns that it was forming, just the ripples, the shapes, the swell, the waves. It was just incredible to watch. And also the sea was coming up really quite high on shore, so coming over the seawall, which we rarely see. The sun, though, has certainly started the growing spurt in the garden and especially our grass, particularly on the northern side of our property because it's much more protected. But it's that really kind of tufty grass and it's combined with a lot of moss as well. But it does mean that we get to see where the deer have been travelling. And currently we've got a family of roe deer in and around our property, mum, dad and two youngsters. Although having said that, my neighbour has just put his cattle back in the field next to us. So probably they will stay away now. They tend to do that. We were sat in the lounge one day and one just appeared at the window. I mean, it's just, amazing. Absolutely love watching them so close to us. The challenge is they love to eat everything, which is fine when they're tackling the weeds, but not so good when it comes to the flowers and the shrubs. We do have plans to get a polytunnel at some point and also to put some beds in the remains of the croft house that we've got on our land. And the way the walls are, we probably could put a gate or just a bit of fence across the doorway to stop the deer getting into it. It's a balance though, because we love being this close to nature and we could get a deer fence around the whole of our property. Apart from it actually being very expensive to do that, I think it would just make us feel very closed in and it's not something that you see in our corner of sky. And we've got a very rustic garden, which we're quite happy with. It certainly suits the land that we've got and the position that we've got. And we don't really have an area that we could easily cordon off with a deer fence that we would put vegetable beds into, because we're on a pretty good slope. The orcas have been back a couple of times and I've missed them again. Each time though, they've just been individual sightings, one day here, one day there. So they've not been around for a prolonged period, or if they have, they've been hiding. They're probably just transiting through the sound. They tend to cover this area of sky and down to Mull quite a bit and then out to the Western Isles. However, as we sat having a very leisurely breakfast yesterday morning, my hubby, TJ Frogstaff, spotted three porpoises. He has the most amazing distance eyesight, and how he managed to spot them I do not know, because I could only see them through the binoculars. It was a pretty special start to the day. Another special wildlife sighting for us, which is a new experience, was seeing nine herons all sat on the shoreside rocks. Nine. I mean, it was just an amazing, unexpected sight. We often see one heron on the shoreline, occasionally two of them together. But to see so many of these beautiful, poised, elegant birds hanging out together like that, it was something to behold. We just stood and, just stared. There's a picture of them in the show notes. Finally, I can happily say, nothing to report about spiders. Creativity. My knitting mojo is back. Hey! I'm back into it big time, which actually is a bit of a challenge because at the moment I could quite happily just sit and knit and sit and knit and sit and knit and knit and sit and do nothing else. I've not long completed a test knit for Scottish knitwear designer Maddie Harvey. It's called Nettle Earnest and it's a vest knitted in double knit and it's got this really beautiful broken rib that travels across the neck and the shoulders. And it's also on a split hemline and then the rest of the body is stocking stitch. I knitted it up in my TJ Frog Shorelines and Strata Dorset Down chalk range and I did it in the purple colourway, which is called Dilston, which is named after one of the Jurassic Coast locations in Dorset. I love the shape of it and I'd actually been looking for something like this for a while and the sheer amount of stocking stitch in it has been really great for me getting back into my knitting, getting those fingers fully functional again. And of course, being a test knit, there was a deadline. I knitted it and blocked it. Yes, I blocked it as well, just in the nick of time. The pattern hasn't been released yet, but as soon as it is, there will be photos out on social media. In the meantime, if you want to take a peek at it and you're on Ravelry, then you can see it on Maddie Harvey's group and you can also see it in my project notes. If you've not seen Maddie's work before, you'll find her patterns both on Payhip and Ravelry. Maddie has designed a mix of shawls, hats, cowls, mittens, sweaters, and her Amma sweater is on my list of projects to do one day. And I have some Countess of Blaze yarn that I bought at Unravel one year to do this. It's a lovely top-down ragland crop top with two colours, which has got these really gorgeous textured stitches that sit across the shoulders and the top of the chest, like a lovely textured yoke pattern. Just one of many, many, many patterns in my queue. The frog tapestry, I haven't attempted to do the backing and piping on that yet. It is turning into a much longer term project. Having almost decided on a fabric back last time, with my current knitting streak, I'm back to thinking I'd like to knit the back with a dense fabric, so possibly like a moss stitch, seed stitch in an Aran weight yarn, and then make a fabric piping or even do an I-cord. Ooh, I don't know. That thought has literally just jumped off my lips. Hey, I hadn't even thought of an I-cord before. That's it. Yeah, definitely going to do the knitted background. I always have so many ideas, you see, and so many projects on the go. Blocking news. Yes, I have blocking news. I have blocked 4 items since last episode. I totally just got on a mission to clear out a couple of projects and things that had been hanging around for too long. A tall order I made last time was a commitment that the Debbie Abrahams Mystery Blanket 2017 would be on the bed in my office for this episode, as well as the Debbie Abrahams Mystery Cushion 2023. Talk about setting myself a huge, huge challenge. Because it's not just the blocking. There's all the duplicate stitch and the buttons and the ends to be weaved in, as well as the blanket has a border to knit, which is a big piece of knitting in itself. What I think I actually meant to say last episode was, oh, and yes, it's going to be another 7 months until the next episode. So I'll have loads of time to do it. That would have actually been the sensible thing to do, leave a really long period. However, in my head, I wanted to get back to a more regular podcast as much as possible. So March was in my head. Thank goodness for a leap year. I had an extra day to play around with. On the 26th of February, I blocked the cushion. Yes, I even made a note of the date that I got unblocked with my blocking. The cushion is totally, totally finished. That's on our sofa now, although the photo in the show notes shows it on the bed in my office. When I did the 2023 cushion as part of a early bird sign up, I also received a little pattern for a beaded purse, which was in Rowan cotton. And it was a great poolside project for when I was away. And that's also blocked, as is a little crochet purse that I've made. As for the blanket, that got blocked on the 5th of March. Yes, another date in the diary. And a couple of weeks ago, I put a picture of all the squares on social media and asked if I could achieve the goal. If you took the time to vote or leave a supportive message for me, thank you. And thank you to Andrea and Felicity for your tips of which bits to prioritise to help me on my way. At that stage, when I put that post out, I knew it was going to be a big challenge, but I was up for it. The squares were blocked by then, and I really thought I could do it. I know that goals should be achievable, but there's nothing like stretching yourself, and I've had some late nights working away on it. Alas, it was not to be. There's a quote by Aristotle, I believe, and I've seen similar versions by Michelangelo and other people, and it says, "Our problem is not that we aim too high and miss, but that we aim too low and hit." So I'm going to take the win on this, that I aimed high and I missed, but at least I had a high aim. All is not lost though, because if I hadn't set myself that challenge, the blanket would be nowhere near to the finishing line as it currently is. And the other thing to consider is I probably could have got it all done in the deadline if I hadn't opted to do the full border. And if you have done this particular blanket, you will know what the full border consists of. There was one option to do a couple of rows of garter stitch, which initially I was going to do. Or you could do an additional 17 knitted flags on each side. 68 flags in total. This is a celebration blanket though, celebrating what was Debbie's 10th year of doing the mystery blanket. And that's what swayed me, that I wanted to have all those celebration flags because I've never done a border like that. So that was a new piece of knitting for me. And at the end of March, which was the self-imposed deadline, I had done 17 flags. I'm just about to start the 35th, so it's close to being finished. There was a couple of other little challenges on the way with this bigger challenge I'd set myself. As while I was Swiss darning and sewing up, my perfectionism was challenged. I was on the last square in one of the strips of seven, and I was mattress stitching it to its corresponding square, when I noticed that on the beautiful beaded cable that runs all up the side of this particular square, one of the beads was out of place. Once I had noticed it, you know, when you notice something, your eye just keeps getting drawn back to it every time I looked at the blanket. And it's a big, big blanket. But yeah, it was kind of like this flashing beacon drawing my eyes to it. I toyed with the idea of frogging it, and I decided that as it was the end square and I'd only have to frog back half of the square, then it would be worth doing. I was having this conflict in my head though, as I just wanted this blanket to be finished. It's gone on for a long time, and to start frogging back and move this one bead felt like a real setback. And I've got all that other queue of patterns waiting to, you know, get onto my needles. I took it to my stitching group to show them, and I explained why I felt I had to frog it and why I was having this inner dialogue with myself. And it was quite interesting chatting to them about it. I thought about breaking the bead and restitching another one in the correct place, only to realize that it wouldn't quite work because the cable was also wrong as well. I'd kind of managed to split the cable. not quite sure how I did that. I then felt I needed to park this for a while, so I carried on working on other parts of the blanket. Then I was doing some Swiss darning on one of the squares, and this square was the fourth square in a row of seven. And the Swiss darning on it was supposed to match up with the Swiss darning on the square beneath it, number three, but it didn't. On investigation, I found I'd knitted the intarsia section too small on one of the squares, and that's why the Swiss darning didn't meet up. Now I was faced with another error, challenging my perfectionism. Did I frog this too? No. I knew, as frustrated as I was, my heart just was not in undoing all the squares and frogging back and redoing this intarsia. And I also felt that if there were two mistakes, there must be another one. I mean, everything comes in threes, doesn't it? I started to give myself a really good talking to at this stage, that if I was going to leave this Swiss darning mistake, then surely the lovely line of beads with the one off centre could also stay. I put it out on my Instagram stories and was overwhelmed by how many people responded. Thank you if you were one of those people who responded. I asked, frog it or leave it. The results, 17%, frog it. So by a wide margin, 83% said leave it. And that's what I've done. This is a massive step for me, the girl who once would have taken it all apart, including that Intarsia Square way down in the strip. Now it's sewn up and it doesn't stand out anywhere near as much as it did before it was sewn up with its corresponding square. Maybe down the line, I could still break the bead off. And I had a lovely tip from Alison. Thank you, Alison, who suggested I could do duplicate stitch to correct the cable. And that was something I hadn't considered. So that was a great tip. For now, my blanket will have perfect imperfections. That's it in my creativity corner. I've focused so much on these projects. I kind of feel I'm out of touch of what the latest patterns are that's on everyone's needles. Not that I've got FOMO or need any other pattern ideas at all. I've got enough already. I'm planning on starting one of the summer tops in my queue as I'm away to Italy in May to the Watermill in Tuscany on a knitting retreat with Debbie Abrahams. And hopefully we will have some pleasant, warm, sunny days where a summery knitted top would be useful. Following on from my renewed love of jigsaw puzzles and mentioning I quite fancy challenging myself to see if I could do 1,000 pieces in under 3 hours as per the British Jigsaw Puzzle Championship, well, there is a plan ahead. My dad has been doing jigsaw puzzles for quite some time. He's always got some on the go and does quite a range of different styles and very challenging ones. I found on the internet the puzzle that was used in the last British Championship. And I bought it for both of us. I'm currently finishing off another puzzle that's the hardest one I have ever done. It's just because of the colours are all so similar. And there's 6 pictures and then all the pictures have got flowers around them and they're all very similar shape. So it's been quite a challenge, that one. Once that's off the jigsaw puzzle board, we plan to set a date and a timer, of course, and see how much of it we can do in 3 hours. The winner will be the one with the least amount of pieces left at the end of the 3 hours. I'll report the outcome. Dorset Buttons and wider news from the TJ Frog Pad. I've started back with an online co-working group who I was with a few years ago, and that's great. We jump on a quick chat about what we plan to do in the hour, put our Zoom onto silent and off we go. And then we have a roundup and a chat at the end and a little mastermind of areas that we may want to just bounce ideas off each other. Apart from a dedicated hour to focus on an aspect of work, it's also been great in the company of other self-employed people who understand what it's like working from home. And last month, the new co-working group started at the Hebridean Inn on the outskirts of Broadford, here on Skye, from 10 till 2 on a Monday. And being the keeny beanie I am, I was the first one to turn up on the first session, and I wondered if anyone else was going to come. Eventually, there was 5 of us. And after quick hellos and a couple of introductions, we all got to work on our laptops, all studious for a couple of hours. And then we stopped for lunch. We all gathered together, moving away onto a different table, which was really good. And we all enjoyed some very nutritious food from their menu, which has a big focus on healthy eating options. And it was really lovely meeting a couple of new people, reconnecting with people I hadn't seen for a long time. I've now been 4 times and it's a great boost to the start of the week. I'm meeting up with other self-employed people and our paths might never have met because we're working in very different areas. If you live in a city or town, this concept might not be unusual to you, but here on Skye, it's a first as far as I know, and I really hope it's going to continue. I feel very focused when I'm there as we've all naturally fallen into this very disciplined way of working, and then the break for lunch feels like a lovely reward, and then we get back onto our work for another hour before we all depart. If you've followed me for a while, you know I've talked about other business avenues I want to pursue and that my creative ideas are many. Some ideas even date back 15 years ago and they've never seen the light of day. And I'm at that point now saying to myself, if not now, when? That means there's a bit of a challenge ahead because something has to change to make room for these other avenues. I've thought long and hard what I can do to pursue these other creative aspects of my business and what, in essence, I can give up. I have taken the very difficult decision to stop making Dorset Button kits. Yeah, I know this is going to be a big blow to some of you. I have loved making my kits and I take a lot of pride in them and they've developed and evolved over time and I love the materials that I use in them. They first appeared at Edinburgh Yarn Festival in 2015 and I can't quite believe where the years have gone. I'm at the point with them where I've either got to go big and totally outsource the whole process, which, to be honest, would probably take away from some of the personal factor that I love about them with some of the hand-dyed yarns that I use from small independent businesses, maybe one skein, and I don't really want to go down that avenue, or I've got to stop in the way that I've been doing them. I have had help in the past, especially in the build-up to some of the big shows, because it is a bit of a factory process, putting them all together. They take an enormous amount of time, though. Going forward, there may well be some special edition kits or show kits, and I will still be designing, just putting my designs out there in a different format. As a mainstay product in the format they are in, I will no longer be doing them so that I can free up some time to pursue those other areas. There are still kits available on the website and I have a lot of resources left for making kits, so they're not going to disappear overnight, but they will be phased out. If there's a kit that you've had your eye on for a long time, then now might be the time to buy it. And if you see a kit on the shop that you're interested in and it's out of stock, please just drop me a message or an email because it's likely that I have the materials for it. It's just not physically made up as a kit. Talking of kits, the Kickstarter kits I did for the Woolly Good Gathering taking place in Edinburgh on the 26th and 27th of April have all gone out. And if you're the recipient of one of those, thank you very much for your support for that and for the event. I think my tickets for my Dorset Button workshop at the Woolly Good Gathering sold out in just over an hour, which always blows my mind and is very humbling. If you're coming along, thank you, and I really look forward to seeing you there. I'm not vending at the show, but I can now announce that I will have a 2-hour pop-up shop on the Friday afternoon. I will have extremely limited stock as I need to be able to transport everything myself in a rucksack and a wheelie case, and I've got a small tabletop display. Therefore, if you're coming along and there's something in particular that you want to have a look at or you want to purchase, please do get in touch beforehand so I can make sure that I have that there for you. Where you'll also be able to find me this year, which has just been announced, I'm vending at the Yorkshire Yarn Festival the 8th to the 10th of November at Sandburn Hall, Flaxton in York. I'm very much looking forward to going back to this venue and this event. I was there in March 2023. It's a beautiful hotel, a lovely show that Sophie of Botanical Yarns and Yorkshire Yarn Festival has curated. And yeah, as I say, looking forward to going back to that. The tickets for the show are now live and there are early bird prices valid until the 1st of September. There's going to be workshops every day. There's a craft night, both Friday and Saturday night. And on Friday, the festival is open from 2 to 4pm for inclusive access to improve accessibility for people living with visible and hidden disabilities. And there's a VIP preview from 4 till 6pm. The VIP ticket also gives you early access on the Saturday and Sunday to the marketplace. And you will find all the details and various ticket prices on the Yorkshire Yarn Festival Eventbrite page. I've had a few people get in touch about virtual workshops and I intend bringing these back in May. Keep an eye out on social media, or alternatively, do sign up for the updates on my website. And if you've been to a virtual workshop with me before, then there's now a loyalty discount for you attending any future virtual workshops with me. I'm asked from time to time if there's another way of supporting my work because you love what I do, either on the podcast or the products I design and make. But you don't want to purchase any products, or you really don't actually need any more Dorset Button Stitch markers, earrings, or kits, or yarn. I've given a lot of thought to this, as well as looking recently at possibilities of monetizing the podcast, such as sponsorship or ads, which is not an avenue I'm particularly wanting to go down, as I want to keep the personal touch to the listening experience. And I also do not intend putting the podcast behind a paywall. If you do wish to support me, though, in ways other than purchasing products, then I have decided to dip my toes into Patreon. You may well be familiar with this platform and already support other creatives on here. If you're not familiar with it, in short, Patreon is a platform which enables creatives to provide a monetized subscription service, offering a variety of tiers with everything from a starting tier of thank you to a high value level, possibly limited number tier, where you might well get a range of rewards such as digital or physical products, as well as a lot of online interaction. At present, I've set up one tier called the Tadpole tier. It's been a bit of a challenge setting this up, challenging my technical skills. It's live now though, phew. And as I say, this really is for those of you who love everything about TJ Frog and you wish to support me on my journey. It comes with immense gratitude, as well as early notification of podcast release dates and a sneak peek at content, as well as a regular pop-up lifestyle or making behind the scenes photo. And all of this you can comment on. If you would like to connect with me in this way, then I'm very excited to see you join the Tadpole tier and grow with TJ Frog's new adventure on Patreon. Alternatively, I've set up a Ko-fi account. I know also from feedback from some of you that you like to offer a creative that you follow a cuppa. And this platform enables you to make that one-time cuppa level of support without needing to register an account. Patreon and Ko-fi, a couple of different ways if you want to support my TJ Frog work in an alternative way to purchasing products. And of course, you can still be on Patreon or support on Ko-fi, as well as buying products if you so wish. As always, any support you can offer, such as spreading the word to friends about TJ Frog, liking, commenting, or sharing a social media post, that is always very much appreciated. Sky Focus, the local lowdown. Last time I chatted about arriving on Skye via the Glenelg to Kyrea ferry, which is the narrowest point between mainland Scotland and Skye, and a route that's been used for centuries. This time I'm going to chat about the other ferry route, possibly the more familiar and popular one, which is from Mallaig on the Scottish mainland to Armidale on Skye, via Caledonian McBrain, or Calmac as it's known. And in contrast to the Glenelg Community Ferry, Calmac is the UK's largest ferry operator, and they run approximately 30 routes to over 50 destinations, including what are termed lifeline services to the islands across 200 miles of Scotland's west coast. It's a service that's going through some challenging times at the moment, and you may have seen the chief executive has just resigned, leaving with immediate effect. It's an ageing fleet, and there's been, in recent times, a lot of breakdowns, technical issues, or greater maintenance required than anticipated. And for many islands, such as the Outer Hebrides, and in particular Mull and Arran, they've had a lot of problems with an unreliable service, which when you're an island impacts tourism, your economy, getting to medical appointments, your day-to-day living and working. How has this impacted and been challenging for Skye then? Well, at times it's meant that our ferry, which was built for our pier, was and is redirected to Mull. And the ferry that we get in place faces a number of disruptions because it's unable to cope with the tides and the pier that we have. It is disappointing. However, we have a bridge, so we're no longer an island in the true sense. So I understand why our ferry gets diverted, but it is challenging for people who want to use this as the access point to Skye. In the time we've lived on Skye, we've seen a drop in regularity and reliability of this service, so we rarely use it now. In our earlier days, when we were doing quite a few trips to and from Skye, we literally would look out the window, we'd see the sea state, and we would know whether the ferry was running or not. Today, that's not the case. If you decide to arrive on Skye via this way, it's A, best to book ahead, and also be mindful that if the ferry does get cancelled for weather or operational reasons, have a backup plan, which is actually likely to be that you have to drive back round to Fort William and to Skye via the bridge, which I'll chat about in the next episode. Despite me saying all of this, it is a beautiful way to arrive on Skye for a couple of reasons. One, the stretch of road or the train journey that you take on the mainland to get to Malaig. Secondly, the area in which you arrive on Skye, and then of course the actual ferry journey, travelling across the Sound of Slate and all the surrounding dramatic landscape that you are enveloped by. The road to the Isles then, the A830, it starts just outside Fort William and it travels through Glenfinnan, Loch Aerlort, Arisaig, Morra and then to Malaig where the ferry departs. It really is a spectacular journey. Takes about an hour, although there is so much to see along the route, my advice is it's definitely worth allowing more time. Key attractions along here, firstly, the iconic Glenfinnan Monument and the Glenfinnan Viaduct. The monument, which is a 18-metre high tower, honours the clansmen who lost their lives as part of the Jacobite Rebellion in 1745, when Prince Charles Edward Stuart, or Bonnie Prince Charlie, or the Young Pretender, as he was also known, led a campaign to reclaim the throne. I'm not going to go into the history here because that would just be another whole massive episode. But if you go online to the Glenfinnan Monument, you will find out more about the history. And even better, if you're ever able to visit the monument, you can learn all about the story at their Information Visitor Centre. You can also climb the monument, which has to be booked in advance. It's not something I've ever done, but I can imagine that the view down Loch Shiel is absolutely spectacular. The Glenfinnan Viaduct, which was made famous by Harry Potter and Hogwarts Express. The viaduct is a spectacular bridge, and it is a wonderful sight when you get to see the Jacobite steam train coming through on its route from Fort William to Malaig. Of course, there's also the regular train service which comes along the same route. And if you want to arrive on Skye without a car, it's considered one of the most picturesque train journeys. And I can only imagine how stunning it must be to wind through the Scottish Highlands in this way. If you do opt to travel to Malaig by train and over on the ferry as a foot passenger, it would be advisable to pre-book a hire car from Drive Skye, which is run by the owner of the garage in Armadale. I personally wouldn't rely on the bus service. Alternatively, if you're happy to hitchhike, which is an accepted mode of getting around Skye, then there is that option too. Although, of course, you may have to wait a while for someone who's willing to take you or has the space for you and your luggage. There's also spectacular coastline to explore along this route, the Road to the Isles. There's great views out to the small isles on a clear day. And the Arisaig and Silver Sands of Morra and Moidart beaches are just out of this world. Gorgeous, white, soft, sandy beaches, and they hold a very special place in my heart. We would often detour along here on our travels long before we lived on Skye. I can still see a photograph I have of myself in all my wet weather gear, just sat on the beach, soaking up the nature, the hills, the mountain, the sand, the wind, the sea, the sounds, everything. The Scottish Highlands stole my heart a very long time ago. Of course, it's way, way, way more popular than we were first visiting, but nevertheless, still worth making a trip to. And when you finally board the ferry, look out for dolphins, porpoise, or you might be one of the super lucky ones who gets to see the orcas. When the ferry arrives at Armidale, you're right on the road then, the A851 that takes you up the Slate Peninsula, which is known as the Garden of Skye. There you are on your trip, your way to explore Skye. Even if you're not planning a trip to Skye, I hope that you have found this interesting and you may even look up and just find out a little bit more about this area on the mainland, the Road to the Isles and the Glenfinnan area. It really is very special. Back in 2020, I'd actually applied to do the Road to the Isles 10K road race. Of course, it got cancelled. My body is now not up to that. I don't even know if they're running it anymore, but I would certainly aspire to do that one day if they are still doing it. I think it would be quite a special 10K to do. That's potentially a challenge for the future. That's the end then of my challenges episode. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch, either drop me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk or via the contact page on the website or on Facebook and Instagram as TJ Frog Sky. The music is by Rob Paintant and licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Until next time.